Former Kansas City Police Department intelligence detective and now attorney Gary Jenkins produced 4 documentary films, most recently Gangland Wire. Creator of smartphone app entitled Kansas City Mob Tours. Download it now. If you like what you hear, go to ganglandwire.com. Navigate to the shop page. We need you to put a hit out on our donate button. Gangland Wire True Crime Stories is produced at the Big Dumb Fun Show Studio 4. And now, here's Gary Jenkins.
Well, good evening, folks. Welcome. This is the second episode of a 2-part episode about mob boss, Cleveland mob boss, Angelo Leonardo, the highest ranking mafia member that ever came in to be a government witness. I'm here in Studio 4 with my good friend, Aaron. Say hello, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
Aaron, I did it.
What'd you do?
140. No. I don't know. I'm still not near the top end of it. This thing must run 160, but I got to 140, and I may be done now. If my wife ever finds out, she'll kill me. She doesn't like to listen to these podcasts. She doesn't like true crime. So
she doesn't like true crime. She probably wouldn't like to know that you're going 140 no, miles an hour.
No, she doesn't like to know that I ever even go 100 miles an hour. She doesn't even like me riding it, but that's beside the point.
Well, when you do ride it and you're going 140 miles an hour, you're not in downtown Kansas City.
No, I'm out in the suburbs, way up north, and in a long, straight stretch of road, make sure there's nobody around.
No cops,
for sure. I go, those damn state troopers, they may be listening to this. They'll probably put a special squad on me out there and cover I-40-35 all the way around the city 24 hours a day, 7 days a week until they can catch the phantom motorcyclist. But, Aaron, they have a podcast too. Just go to canfilters.com/podcast, and you'll get a great deal on a K&N replacement air filter with free shipping, and as a bonus, you'll get a free K&N hat. I want to get me one of those hats.
I don't think you can ride it when you're going 138 miles an hour, though.
Well, you got to have your helmet on if you're doing 138 miles an hour, and you have to have it buckled tightly around your neck because the wind wants to lift it right off your head.
K&N sells over 5,000 products designed for cars, trucks, motorcycles, engines, and industrial applications. Find them online at knfilters.com, or their social media hashtag is #knfilters.
They probably have a Facebook page too. Well, the Big Dumb Fun Show. Aaron, why don't you tell people about the Big Dumb Fun Show? We haven't said anything about that. You got a quick little elevator pitch you got on that, don't you?
The Big Dumb Fun Show is a drive time style trending talk independent unsigned music radio television program that airs live Mondays from 7 to 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. Go on over to BigDumbFunShow.com. You can download prior episodes for free. 3 hours of great independent unsigned music and trending talk with myself and great guests like Gary Jenkins from Gangland Wire.
You can download that. I tried to figure that out and see if I could download that and then do something with that last audio that I did.
I know. I don't have that one up.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's that 1.8 gigabyte wave file.
Oh, that's right.
All
right. Okay. All right.
But you can actually, that episode is up and available. It's in replay on our live stream.
I can't.
So I drag that over, and it just plays that episode and a number of other episodes.
Well, what we did that night's kind of the moments past. We did a spiel of we talked about the
bombing in Chelsea in New York City.
The bomber in New York City that was arrested. So that's that's okay.
We'll still put it up.
We can still put it up. Now let's go back to Angelo Leonardo. Aaron, I've got an audio that I brought. Let's just start off with this. This is a audio of Carl Tuffy DeLuna, the Kansas City underboss, and Milton Mashy Rockman. Now, Mashy Rockman from Cleveland, it was his job to be the liaison to pick up the casino skim money and get it back to the Italian guys like Leonardo to cut up with the other MAID members. You know, in Kansas City, when they got the skim in, though, we found in Tuffy's notes, we found a list of who got what percentage. Like, for example, the boss got, Nick Savella got, I think, like 30%. Then his brother, Carl Savella, got, say, 10%, and Tuffy got 10%. And there's some older guys. There were MAID guys. You could tell who were the MAID guys, like Thomas Dude Fontanello, and he got 5%. Felix Farina got 5%. So some of these other guys got much smaller amounts. And then they had $1,500 down there for the rancher, and the rancher was their Teamster contact, Roy Lee Williams. And so they had to coordinate with these other mob families to make sure they got their money and to coordinate when the money came in. And then Mashy Rockman would always drive from Cleveland, either Chicago or to Kansas City on a few occasions, and pick up his share of the skim. Mainly he drove to Chicago, but he coordinated with Tuffy. And this is a phone conversation between Milton Mashy Rockman and Tuffy DeLuna, which you really won't understand. It's all in code. There's one thing that I will kind of explain to you, but listen to this. It's only a couple minutes long.
Yeah. Hi, buddy. How are you? I walked in the door when you and her hung up.
Yeah.
I was just pulling in the garage. He didn't get to hear me. Yeah. And I went to drop the baby off at school and got caught with big snag coming back. Well, I should have been here by 9 o'clock without any trouble. And just for a minute, you and I met each other. Are you fixed? I found out that $11 is all right.
You ought to find, because I should be there in the next hour.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'll get $11 worth then.
Fine, that'll be fine. I can pick it up then.
I'll catch you. We'll have some coffee later, okay?
Right.
All right, you take care.
Yeah.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, folks, that was a wiretap between, it was actually a wiretap of Tuffy DeLuna's home, and Mashy Rockman had called him. The first voice you heard was Tuffy. Now, to help you out, it was Tuffy that said, I found out $11 is okay, or I found out $11 is all right, and the response was, I should be there in about an hour. Now, that was Mashy Rockman. What that means is that was $11,000, and he wasn't going to be at Tuffy's house. Tuffy makes it sound like he later says, well, I'll meet you for coffee, but which means that someday he'll meet him for a meeting face to face. That was their little code for we're going to meet face to face. But he wasn't going to meet him then because Mashy Rockman said he was about an hour out. He was on his way to Chicago, and he was going to meet probably Anthony or George Schiavola, Nick Savella's brother-in-law in Chicago, with the $11,000, and then he turned around and drive it back to Cleveland. That's how hard it is to decipher these cases. You have this kind of code words, these kinds of things, and you need somebody to come and interpret it. And so Angelo Leonardo is the kind of guy that then could listen to that and say, this is what this means. When he says, what date was that? For example, and say, yeah, he went, Leonardo would say, yeah, Mashy went to Chicago and picked up $11,000. And right then, you know, that was what that conversation was all about. So you have somebody that testifies that on that date that happened, and play the tape. I'll kind of go back over this whole, the movie Casino. Now, I've gone over this before. The movie Casino with Robert De Niro depicted him as Ace Rothstein, which in real life was Lefty Rosenthal, who was basically running the Stardust, the Hacienda, the Marina, and the Frontier. And these four hotels were owned by a man named Alan Glick. Now, Alan Glick was a 32-year-old real estate entrepreneur who really had not done much in the past, developed one small shopping center. He got connected, nobody really knows how exactly, from somebody in Las Vegas, vouched for him. He got hold of the mob boss of Milwaukee, Frank Ballesteri, traveled to Milwaukee, and asked him to use his influence to help get a $62 million Teamsters pension fund loan. Ballesteri can't do that all on his own. He had one guy named Frank Rainey, who was on the Teamsters Pension Fund board, but one member is not enough. Ballesteri then went to Kansas City and got Nick Savelle's cooperation, who owned another team, his own Teamster, Roy Lee Williams, who was the president of the local 41 and 541 in Kansas City, and was also, I believe he also sat on the board, or he would have controlled somebody that sat on the pension fund board. Also had to get hold of Milton Rockman, and he used his relationship with Cleveland Teamster president Jackie Presser.
What about Chicago?
And Chicago, yeah, good question. Chicago, remember who they had, Aaron?
Wasn't that Alan Dorfman?
Right. They had a man named Alan Dorfman, whose father, Red Dorfman, had been a Teamster back with Hoffa in the old days. In the old days, I mean the 50s and 60s, I guess. And Alan Dorfman he did not sit on the pension fund board, but he had control over some of the members of it and could influence them. And when these four mob families conspired and formed a cabal, they got the loan approval, and that's when Glick formed the Argent Corporation, bought the Stardust Hotel Casino, the Hacienda Frontier, and the Marina. As I said before, they installed Lefty Rosenthal to work in the Stardust and coordinate and hire other people who would then collaborate and get the scheme started. They had probably brought back at one time at least $100,000 a month. And with that, all that flowed to Chicago. And Rockman was a pickup man, as that tape revealed, although it didn't really reveal it directly, did it? He was a pickup man for the Cleveland share. Now, the share for Chicago, for Cleveland alone was around $40,000 a month, and Leonardo himself got $10,000 a month as the underboss. This was before Licavoli died. He would even get more money once he got promoted to boss. Jackie Presser, just like Roy Lee Williams, got $1,500 a month.
Well, for being the guys that helped him get the loan, it seems like they've got a pretty low amount of money that they're getting in comparison to these other made men.
And it seems like it to me, but I don't think they were in a position to bargain. I think they owned them already, and they could have killed them, and they knew that. So they were happy with whatever they got, I got a feeling. Leonardo testified to all this, and he also, during this, he kind of gave a little insight into mafia politics, if you will. He said Milwaukee and Kansas City are aligned with Chicago, and they call it the outfit in Chicago, but he said Cleveland was not really aligned with Chicago. They're aligned with the Genovese family in New York City. He talked a lot more about that, and I'll go into that in another podcast. We'd like to get that Rick Perello to call in or be on and talk really in depth about the Cleveland Mafia, because it's a little unique, more Eastern, and Leonardo, you have to believe him when he says they were aligned with the Genovese family. I would always assume they were aligned with Chicago, but I have to believe that they were aligned with the Genovese family in New York City.
Well, all of this is really revolving around the fact that Angelo Leonardo became a snitch.
Yeah, I know. And you know, he's got this penitentiary system.
He's got a sentence. He was
sentence of life in prison. I guess they gave him life. I thought it was a long time.
He was old to begin with.
No, he was 77. I think 77 years old when this all went down.
And then they put him in the slammer and for drug charges in the 80s, and he's looking at dying in prison.
Yeah.
And they give him a business card, and they're like, hey, if you ever got to think about it, give me a call.
And he thought about it.
And he called him.
He made that call. I can imagine the FBI agent, he probably was doing the happy dance when he hung up from that phone call. He assured his reputation as a true mob-busting, crime-fighting FBI agent.
Special agent.
Special agent, yes. Believe me, in those worlds, when you bring in the big one, you bring in the big informant like that, you are king shit in your squad. And that's important. I remember if I come in with something really good in my squad within the intelligence unit, I like that. I like that feeling. Everybody's kind of looking at you like, oh, wow, that guy's a good cop. That's probably the best thing. I hear some of these other retirees or young policemen say, oh, yeah, I heard he's a good cop. Or for an FBI agent, I heard he was a really good agent. That's huge.
That's how you make your bones.
That's how you make your bones in my world.
Well, here's the question I would have is, do you think that the FBI agent that gave him the card Was that just a, like, do you think that was his office number, or was that like you guys would have a number for, like, it would call this number if you want to?
It could have been a hello number, but it was probably just, he gave me his card, probably said the FBI. It would have been his office number.
Office number.
Their organized crime squad. At that point in time, every city had an organized crime squad and would have had a number and extension, probably as a number to the main FBI switchboard in Cleveland. And then they,
somebody would answer that.
Answered. He just asked for the agent, and they transfer him right to his desk. Now, whether he was there or not, he was probably there. And I'm sure they're instructed to take any phone calls from penitentiaries, that anybody that calls in.
They would note that for sure.
Yes. But Leonardo, he would eventually get out of prison and return. You know, we talked about this after you testify against the mob. You know, the popular myth always was that you were dead. They never forget. The mob never forgets. Yeah. They'll get you eventually.
You can go into the witness relocation program, but what we've learned over the course of doing the program, Gangland Wire, is that that's not a lifetime program.
No. It could be if you wanted to maintain that cover all your life.
But they don't just pay you forever.
No, you got to get a job, but you can continue to hide out under a different name.
Yeah, they give you a completely different identity.
Right. A lot of these guys don't, and really people who have testified against big-time people like Angelo Leonardo, because he comes back and lives out his last years in Cleveland. Just like, you know what's going on today, Frank Culotta, who testified against all these same guys and in this same trial, and he was going to testify against one of the baddest dudes in the world at the time, but who got killed, Tony Spilotro. He was an underling and part of Tony Spilotro's hole-in-the-wall gang. He testified against them all, and he was in the witness protection program for a while. Matter of fact, if you remember, Aaron, when I went out, I got a hold of him when I went out to Las Vegas to interview these FBI agents and casino employees that live out in Las Vegas that had worked at the Stardust and worked on Lefty Rosenthal for the movie. I got a phone number for Frank Culotta. Actually, I'll take that back. He got my phone number. He called me, and I said, I'd like to interview you for this. And he said, it's going to cost you. And I said, how much? He said, he wanted me to come up with a figure. So I said, okay, I'll give you $500. He said, shit, man. He said, that won't even pay for me to come into Las Vegas. And I said, that's the most I'm going to offer. So I talked to him a little bit, and it was pretty obvious. He knew a lot of stuff, but he didn't know that much about the skim. He knew a lot of the relationships, but all the FBI agents knew all that. He didn't know any details about the skim, because his part in that whole skimming or Las Vegas operation was as a burglar and a hitman working with Tony Spilotro and his gang. Now, they may have done some enforcement actions on casino people who they didn't like or who Lefty Rosenthal turned them on to.
But they were too busy heisting jewelry,
yes.
Selling it out of his jewelry shop on the Strip.
The Gold Rush.
That's another store. One of those great locations that should be in the Kansas City Mob Tour app, although I know it's in Vegas.
Yeah, that's true. I could probably, I haven't left people from Kansas City that go to Las Vegas. Maybe I should put some in there. But Frank Culotta, let's finish on him. He is now running. He's all over Facebook. If you guys want to find Frank Culotta, just go to Facebook and type in search for Frank Culotta, and you'll find his Facebook page, and he has a mob tour, and you can just go out. One of our good podcast supporters, Barry Parks, from right here in Kansas City, got hold of me, and I got hold of Frank and said, hey, take care of this guy. I don't really know Frank that well, but that's how it works in his
world.
That's
the phrase you use,
isn't
it?
That's the phrase you use, and Barry and a friend of his went out, and they took the mob tour. Barry said it was really quite enjoyable, and they had a good time.
Well, doesn't Frank Culotta also have the Las Vegas Mob Museum?
No, he
That's different.
That's different. That's totally different. He just has the mob tour. The Mob Museum, that's quite a deal, too. I would highly recommend, if you go to Las Vegas, to take the tour of the Mob Museum. It's a little bit expensive, but it's a first-class, top-of-the-line museum. If you've ever been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which is in Cleveland, by the way, isn't it?
It is.
The same people that designed all the displays and the creative people behind that are the same people that they hired to do the Mob Museum in Las Vegas. So it's first class. It's a really cool deal.
Are you going to be there in January for Mob Month?
I'll be there in January for Mob Month. Second Tuesday, I believe. If it gets closer, I'll put that out. Maybe some of you guys. I know we have one guy, Casey McBride, one of our new fans, has been a big supporter. He indicated he might. He's sending some music, some bumper bed music, and music that I can use to help amp these up. By the way, he's a musician out in Portland, I believe, and he said he might come down. He came down. He must have some reason to come back and forth to Las Vegas. He came down and saw Christian Cipollini when he was at the our friend Christian Cipollini, who wrote the Luciano book, gave a talk at the Mob Museum sometime in the last couple of weeks. See, we're kind of like the mafia, all of us mafia fans and mafia students and mafia podcast creators and Facebook page administrators and writers of books and makers of documentary films. We all kind of know each other and we connect with each other. We need to get us a commission where we can all meet. And if somebody makes us mad, we conspire to do something about them or take their business away from them. Well, no, that's what the
boss. We set up a business right next to theirs and run them out of business. That's
now what we do is we support each other because a rising tide lifts all boats. So I support all my people like that. Red Wimette, you know, we're going to put his podcast up next, his interview.
He's another great FBI informant.
Red is still a little bit nervous about, and he's been under for, I don't know, maybe 15 years. He's still nervous about coming back out, though.
Except he's doing like a little YouTube thing now.
He's doing a little posting on Facebook, little short videos, and telling what he calls bedtime stories about the Chicago outfit. So you can't really get hold of him. He has got a book. The book is What If You Did Something and Nobody Did Anything About It or something along those. Just run Red, R-E-D, Wimette, W-E-M-E-T-T-E. If you're on my Facebook page.
RedWimette.com.
RedWimette.com. Or if you're on my Facebook page, you will see that I repost a lot of his stuff all the time. A great Facebook page, the Chicago Outfit, run by a guy named David Byrne in Chicago, and that's a really good one, too. The NCS, National Crime Syndicate, is a great one, too. I'm an administrator on it, and then, of course, the Milwaukee Mob page is just getting started. There's a lot of great mob information, and we're getting to know each other. You know, Leonardo's, and a lot of you guys probably never heard his name before. I barely had. When I started doing this podcast and started getting into this kind of thing. And it's a lot less familiar than a lot of other mafia turncoats, like Sammy the Bull Gravano, who testified and helped put John Gotti in the penitentiary, who, by the way, he was in the witness protection program, and he got involved in some kind of a narcotics thing, and he's back in the joint now. I don't know if he's in the joint under Sammy the Bull Gravano or his new name.
Now, so then Angelo Anthony Leonardo, who was born in 1911, he died April 1st of 2006.
Right.
Here it says, according to the Wikipedia page, after he left the Federal Witness Protection Program, he returned to Cleveland. Leonardo died in his sleep on April 1st of 2006 at the age of 95.
Oh, he's that old. I didn't realize that old, man. He was probably the oldest living mobster at age 95, too.
It never seems suspicious that he just died in his sleep. No one probably, you know, did they send the body to a coroner to do an autopsy at that point? You don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, at age 95, I don't think you worry about it. You got a doctor that's under the doctor's care, and the doctor's willing to sign a death certificate. You don't do an autopsy unless there's some real strong evidence of foul play.
And if you're really interested and want to see his cemetery plot, he was buried at Calvary Cemetery in Cleveland.
Oh. Interesting. Well, you know, I said something about the FBI agent who turned him. And that was huge. And actually, we have his name. I'd forgotten I had his name. I was just looking back at my notes. Rick Perello had tried to interview Leonardo several times, at least twice or three times. He never would interview him. He talked to the agent, who is now deceased, FBI agent Joseph Griffin, who was the agent in charge of the FBI field office in Cleveland at the time. And he took the call. that turned Angelo, the highest ranking mob person that's ever, still to this day, that's ever turned and become a government witness. That was a huge coup for him, and what you would call the grand prize. He will go down in FBI history. You know, and if you think about it, the other guys that came in, Jimmy Fratiano, Jimmy, was what they call him? Jimmy, not Jimmy the Greek. What they call Fratiano? Well, can't remember now. Jimmy Fratiano, he was a mob captain. He was pretty high ranking. Joseph Valachi was a soldier. He knew a lot of stuff, but not like a mob boss would. I mean, Leonardo just laid out that whole multi-million dollar a year Teamsters, Las Vegas, four mob families, scam that was going on.
Well, having that and then the documents from Tuffy DeLuna that outlined his expenses and how the amounts were divvied up.
Yeah, when you put it with the wiretaps and Tuffy's notes and people like this testifying, they got one of the guy from the Tropicana, Carl Thomas, to come in and testify, and Joseph Agosto came in and testified. Several others testified, but nobody would be as important as Angelo Leonardo. It's said that Angelo Leonardo is to Jimmy Fratiano and Joseph Valachi like what the president of General Motors would be to a foreman and assembly line worker. That's the difference in the two. Well, I think we've probably pretty well done Mr. Angelo Leonardo, just on the surface. You know, this is just a surface look at this guy, and we will go more in depth. I'm going to get hold of this Rick Perello, or at least make an effort, and he is the expert on Angelo Leonardo. And we'll do a phone-in interview with him, just like we've done with our friend Bill Friedman.
You know, the interesting thing here, in the Wikipedia page about the Cleveland crime family, the history says at the top of the queue here, underneath the founded by Joseph Big Joe Leonardo, who would have been
his father.
Right. Founded in Cleveland, Ohio.
One of the first mafia bosses.
From the 1990s to the present, the territories are Greater Cleveland and all of Ohio, Southern Florida, and Las Vegas.
But they had a bunch of rackets. They called them the Youngstown, Ohio rackets. There was a lot of joints that with gambling and prostitution in Youngstown, Ohio, and they controlled the Youngstown, Ohio rackets, which is kind of a big deal if you're into that sort of thing.
But here it says that there's the Leonardo and the Perello brothers. The Cleveland crime family originated in the early 1900s when four Leonardo brothers, Joe, Frank, Joe, and Dominique, and seven Perello brothers migrated to the United States from Licata, Sicily.
So they all came from the same
region in Sicily.
Same little town. That makes sense. That happens quite often, I think.
Leonardo and Perello brothers first established themselves as legitimate businessmen. The two groups dabbled in various criminal activities, including robbery and extortion, before Prohibition, but were not yet considered major organized crime figures. At the start of Prohibition, Joseph Big Joe Leonardo was the boss of the Cleveland crime family. He was the second oldest of the four Leonardo brothers. He and his brothers began by supplying Cleveland bootleggers with the corn sugar they needed to produce liquor. His top lieutenant was Joseph Big Joe Perello, who supervised various bootlegging and other criminal operations throughout the early to mid-1920s. So I wonder, you talked about Rick Perello.
Yeah, I don't know.
Actually wrote the book Kill the Irishman.
And the Rise and Fall of the Cleveland Mafia. And it says he was curious about the mysterious murder of his grandfather, along with the deaths of several uncles. I got a feeling that those Perellos were his grandfather and his uncles. Well, we've got to get this guy on here and find out what's up.
Let's see, they call Mayfield Road Mob. But here must be where this is where the Perello name comes back in. On July 5th, 1930, Joseph Perello was invited to a sit down with Frank Milano at Milano's owned Viennese restaurant. Gunfire erupted and boss Joseph Perello and his underling were killed. Vincenzo Jim Perello succeeded his brother as the Cleveland Mafia boss. 3 weeks after his brother's murder, Vincenzo was shot in the back of the head and murdered in a grocery store on East 110th Street and Woodland Avenue in an area considered a Perello stronghold. That might be some of the interesting backstory for...
Yeah, I bet anything that's this Rick Perello's relatives. We'll find that out. All right, I think it's about that time.
About time to make your public service announcement.
You're right, Aaron. How'd you know? You, like, read my mind. I have long supported the nonprofit First Call. If you have a friend, a relative, a child, a grandchild, a spouse, a parent, or anybody you care about that has an addiction problem, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900. If you're outside the area, which majority of you guys are, and you just need some local resources, try going to www.firstcallkc.org or call that number and tell them what city you're in and ask them for some resources in your city.
And remember to rent or buy the documentary that started it all, Gangland Wire, available on Amazon for download or purchase. And Gary Jenkins is quite a documentary filmmaker because not only is that one of his many documentaries, he has several others that aren't even crime related, including Negroes to Hire, Slave Life and Culture in an Antebellum Missouri Farms, which won an award from the Jackson County Historical Society for the best historical documentary film of the year in 2011. He's also produced Freedom Seekers, stories from the Western Underground Railroad.
And how about we talk about giving us reviews, and we beat that to death, but we still would like to have reviews to help get us up in the algorithms on
iTunes.
Go to iTunes, search for Gangland Wire. When that comes up, and you see the small thumbnail icons with the episodes down below that, there's a larger icon which has the Kansas City skyline. Tap on that and you should get another screen that then says episodes, reviews, and related. Tap on the reviews tab and then it'll say leave a review, and you can type in a review and tap on some stars up there, and then let me know you gave us a review and I'll get you something.
If you're outside the U.S., we'll send you an exclusive digital copy of something that you would only get from someone like Gary Jenkins. Maybe some of the words from the mouths of the men that did it.
Yeah, you want an actual wiretap unedited? I'll send you that. I'll pick out the most clear one that I've got, and I'll send you that. All for your own use.
And remember to download the Kansas City Mob Tour app. If you're in Kansas City, for $1.99, you can take your own personal tour of notorious mob locations in and around Kansas City, including Union Station, The Trap,
Villa Capri, the Virginian Tavern, the house, the apartment where John Lazia was killed. We did a whole program on the killing of John Lazia, didn't we?
We did. And
have I put that one out yet?
Did you put that
out?
No,
I haven't.
Dramatic reading.
That's a premium episode. I haven't put that out yet.
And you can find out where the Democratic Social Club was at, where the two Charlies were killed.
Where the two Charlies were killed. And you can find the spot of the tavern in there anymore, but at Southwest Boulevard and State Line, you can find the location of the Last Chance Lounge, where they were last seen alive before they went up to the Democratic Social Club and were killed by persons unknown. But we know Nick Civella did it. Don't we, Aaron?
It seems it could point in that direction so often.
He quickly became the boss,
too
long after that.
A boss is replaced by his driver.
And so Nick Civella was driving for the next guy who became the boss after the two Charlies were killed. And then that guy died a natural death. Shortly after that, Nick Civella became the boss by 1957.
And the best part about the app is it also has all of the episodes from Gangland Wire. And you can listen to those while you're taking the tour.
Really, Aaron had a great idea. Go down to the Union Station and see the bullet holes or by the right-hand door when you're facing it and listen to our episodes on the Union Station massacre. I think it's fascinating. We got to Terrence O'Malley is a real expert on the Union Station massacre. He told us all kinds of extraneous stories that you've not heard anyplace else.
And you may not have heard who actually turned out to be the person that killed the FBI agent.
Really? Yeah, it's not who you think it is it, Eric?
But you're going to have to listen to the episode to find out.
That's true. All right, say goodnight, Aaron.
Goodnight, Aaron. Music provided by Odd-O-Matic. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/Odd-O-Matic Music.